don't think there's any reason why there shouldn't be a regular meeting of the Bicycle Advisory Committee that they could, so that before decisions are rendered, even tentatively, that you have their input, and you can take their input or leave it. We can take their input or leave it, but at least you have their input. The odds are that on the majority of the issues, maybe not all of them, that there'll be a way to reconcile their desires, their interests with our needs on the construction project. But if we don't talk to them, then we get this feeling that I understand on their part that they're being ignored. I don't think it's your intent to ignore them. It's certainly not the intent of this board to ignore them. We didn't set this thing up to meet once or twice. So I would really ask that I don't want to get into the weeds on any details of any particular issue today, but I would ask that you and your staff for the time being convene a monthly meeting with the Bicycle Advisory Committee and engage them on all the issues that we have. And I want to say something to the Bicycle Advisory Committee. Some of the things you ask for cost money, and some of the things that you may ask for may cost a lot of money. And it may not be possible either for financial reasons or for logistical reasons or for both. So it's not going to be a one-way street either way. I just want that to be clear. But we don't even know how many of these things are reconcilable or not, since we're not really talking to them. And it hurts me, it pains me to hear people say they can't get a hold of staff. I don't know if that's 100% true, but that shouldn't be the perception that's out there, that they can't get a call back from staff on things. But I think a lot of that would be rectified if you had a regular meeting, it was an agenda, you could exchange ideas, let them be a part of the process, recognizing that they're not designing this project on their own. This is a partnership, and this board will be the ultimate decision maker. But I really think we need to do this. As inconvenient as it may be, given all the other crises that the agency is, crises may be an exaggeration, but just the issues that we need to deal with now, I think you need to make the time a couple hours a month to meet with these folks would not be too much to ask and too much for them to expect. All right? Can we take care of that?
Yeah, I mean, the timing is especially appropriate because we just received the preliminary engineering from the contractor. So we'll definitely do that. But I'd certainly like to take a second to assure the board that staff is responsive. I personally get emails from the Bicycle Advisory Committee members, and I return those emails. And if I don't know the answer, I get my staff to evaluate it. And so I don't know of any time that we've ever been contacted and not responded to the Bicycle.
All right. We'll accept that. But I think rather than do it on an ad hoc basis, we need to formalize it, structure it so that everybody knows that on Tuesday we're all getting together, and you need to have your info together. They need to have their bill of particulars together and discuss them. These are not crazy, unreasonable people. They may have crazy or unreasonable requests, but they're rational people, and I think just as we did on the Orange Line and you've done on other lines, most of the time you can find a meeting of the minds and how to resolve issues. Sometimes you can't, but most of the time you can. But you can't if you're not talking. So let's take steps to formalize a monthly meeting, maybe starting September, if not sooner, so that we can get this thing going. Okay?
Mr. Chairman, I think
Thomas?
I think Mr. Thorpe has something against bicycles, and I want to know what it is.
Actually, I ride my bike just about every weekend. So
yeah.
I am.
Maybe
believe it or not,
it is.
Okay. Next, we have Clint Simmons. Clint, are you here? There he is. Okay. You signed up on three items, so I'll give you a
I'd like to comment on, I'd like to make discussion. This is on 7D. Is this your final noise report, or is this just something that you're putting up here for the board?
Go ahead, Anna.
It's just an interim report because a lot of people were asking for the results that our noise consultant were going to be doing additional work out there as well. But I wanted to make sure that the board was had the information as soon as it was available.
Yeah, but you want them to get good information, though, right? So this is more just to, for the board, just to meet something that somebody asked you for. Is that what I'm hearing from you? Is that what
no, this well, is our interim noise
okay,
consultant.
Okay, is this your final report?
No. He said no. It's an interim report.
Okay, so interim
it's
report.
A work in progress.
Interim
but you have asked, and we have asked for a status report. That's
well, yes, I have. Okay.
Okay.
No problem. I have no problem with that at all. The next item is our 7C. Sorry. No, I won't touch that one real quick. Let's go to 5C. This pertains to the movement of a sewer down at USC. We also have the same problem at La Cienega where concrete was used to encapsulate in order to rush the bridge across at La Cienega, and I don't think that has been replaced either, so that's something else that you have to take into consideration. And that was an engineering change order that was written by the CEO for to put that in as a temporary fix until the Department of Awarded Power of LAUSD could put the permanent in. So we're still living with the same situation at La Cienega that is at USC. I just want to make that clear. We are staying with this thing here. The next item is talking about the frog that the PUC has come into being downtown. We also have a frog problem out in Culver City. We have a severe frog problem on both ends of the diamond. As the train goes through, some of them go through real fast. Some are going slow because they're conscious of it, and it's right where Hayden are dead end to the track, and I went over on the other side and took some noise measurement of the residents over there who had asked me to, because we didn't know about the problems that we have in our area, so you have a frog problem there that should be fixed. It is a defective frog is what it is. As the train goes through the frog is supposed to, and this one goes clack, that means it was defective when it was put in because it shouldn't be making that kind of noise. Going back to the lady who was speaking about speeding the train up, I would just love for you to try to do that because this was used to sell this to the FTA that you would run the train at traffic level down Exposition Boulevard. And this is one of the things that we had protests when it first came into being. And I would just love to see you try to stop the cars longer than at the present time because if you do, then you get into trouble with the PUC and the FTA because the FTA was made a comment on this. That is why you didn't get the new start money on this particular contract. But you wanted to run this thing through and you sold them on the idea that you're going to run it at street level and the train will stop with the traffic. And God knows I would love to see it around Crenshaw. We already have a problem there now. And you're talking about going to delay it another cycle. I would just love it. It's possible that there be lawsuits all out of the kabookaboo on this one at Crenshaw and Western Avenue as well. So, lady, you're going to live with that train being slow at the present time. Or you're not
okay.
The train.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Simmons.
I say thank you for giving me a chance to speak, too. So it's getting much better now. I'm beginning to. And one other thing I want to say, people ride the train free. They was asking me, why don't I take a ride on it? Because nobody have to pay to get on it. You just get on and ride. That's where it is.
All right. So I think Mr. Simmons is offering his services as a public relations officer for the agency. So
he'll know.
He'll know. Not go that far. Huh? I heard two compliments. Are you aware of another frog problem?
It's not a frog problem, but he is correct. The slapping noise, there's some dampeners, and they were defective, and they're being replaced.
This is in Culver City?
In Culver City.
Okay, thank you. All right, that concludes the public hearing, public comment. Let me, for the record, say that Director O'Connor has joined us, and let's go on to the next item.
Next item, item 5, consent calendar.
Move it.
Move the consent calendar is moved by Cleveland Thomas, seconded by O'Connor. Any discussion? If not, unanimous vote.
Next item, General Board Action Items, Phase 1. I'm sorry, 6A, Phase 2, Sepulveda Parking Structure Improvements.
All right, Rick.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this item has been a work in progress for some time. It has two components to it. One is a recommendation on urban design improvements to the parking structure at Sepulveda. The second is recommended safety enhancements that we work with Metro on and are recommending as well. Just to kind of set the stage, parking garages aren't the most attractive things in the world, and it's hard to make them look very attractive. When we bid out the project, we essentially said that we wanted a parking structure similar to the parking structure at La Cienega. We did get that, but putting this parking structure at Sepulveda is somewhat unique. We asked the Urban Design Committee to take a look at it to see if there were anything we could do to enhance the looks beyond the safety issues that we were looking into. And it also, one side of it, the south side, abuts a community, a residential community. They had concerns about headlights and people, visibility into their backyards from people parking there. So the Urban Design Committee, we've worked with them over the last 3 or 4 months. They have come up with recommendations to address some of those concerns. The first one is to construct what we call a privacy screen on the back side or the south side adjacent to the residential area. We've done this for other parking structures, the east side, east side Gold Line project, the Atlantic parking structure, where you put a steel mesh that the vines grow up, and eventually you have a nice soft green side of the parking structure. So that is one of the recommendations to address the community concerns. Another one was the visual aesthetics, because on either side there are buildings of the parking structure. On the front side will be adjacent to Exposition Boulevard. The Urban Design Committee felt that it was important to enhance the look from that perspective as well, so we have a feature, do some features that draw your attention so that people know this is a Metro parking structure for the light rail. One of them was to eliminate the fins on the side that were adjacent to buildings and make them more dense and to provide a bright color and move them out to the front. And so that was one of the recommendations to do. The other was a textured concrete finish on the side of the elevator shaft, because it's a very prominent feature out in the front of the structure, as well as to incorporate a molding that has the Metro logo on it, so when people drive by, they see that that's a Metro parking facility. And then one that the committee hasn't addressed at this point but was recommended by the architect was to add some lighting on the front side of the building at night, so that, again, better visibility of that parking structure at night. Those are the urban design enhancements. They total about $350,000. That money, if you wanted to proceed with it, would have to come from our project contingency. The second element is safety and security enhancements. Again, working with Metro, wanted to make sure that the people inside the elevator would be able to be seen. And so one one of them is to change the stainless steel doors on the parking side of the elevator to glass so that people can see in from the various levels as people go up and down, and then also to do it on the opposite side as well. So from the street, you'll be able to see clearly into the elevators as to what's taking place inside the elevators from a security standpoint.
And this request came from Metro?
Yes.
Is this the way we've handled elevators and other structures?
No, we normally have the stainless steel on the stainless steel doors, but this is a new, I won't say criteria, but it's a new safety feature that Metro would like to see applied to all future projects.
Yeah, I think one of the things maybe we can do at Metro is ask them to look at the other structures around town and see if they want to put their money where their mouth is on retrofit. Your problem. I think if it's good enough for the Westwood Boulevard station, it's elsewhere. And I'd like to, Thomas and I will bring that to the attention of the Metro people. All right.
We need to formalize it, Mr. Chair.
I don't think it's necessary. I think we just Metro Board's attention, Metro staff's attention, get a cost estimate, and that sort of thing. And I don't think we have a glass elevator at La Cienega on this project, for example, do we?
We actually have a three-sided glass, but we don't have it on the inside. The doors, as I recall, are stainless steel.
So it's visible from the street?
Right, from the street.
Okay.
All corners, so all La Cienega and Jefferson.
And on the Robertson, there's going to be a structure on Robertson eventually? Parking structure at the Culver City station?
Oh, Culver City, it's all going to be underground eventually.
The station's going to be underground?
No,
the parking structure will be underground.
Okay, with
so
the joint development.
It doesn't apply to that.
Yeah.
Okay, but we have other lines also. So, okay, we'll take a look at that. Director Koretz.
Yeah, just a couple of questions on the sound elements. I don't know how other stations have been located. I know this one's very close to the homes. I think I heard that there was some discussion of an anti-squeal treatment on the floors of the parking structure. I haven't seen it appear here. Was that discussed, and is there some way to do that?
My understanding is that's already included as part of the project, so it wouldn't be an additional enhancement that we would have to do a change order for at this point.
Right. And
verify that.
And the green privacy screen, I don't know how close Atlantic Street is to homes, but I was going to ask how effectively that screens out sound as opposed to just the visual privacy. Because I believe there are homes within, I don't know, 50 or 100 feet of that parking structure.
I'm really not sure about the answer, but our noise consultant's here, so when we get to that item, maybe we could bring that up and see.
It sounds good from a privacy standpoint and an aesthetic standpoint, but I don't know if I'm not an expert in this area. I don't know if that's adequate to actually help the neighbors in terms of the sound element of it.
If I could just add, Paul, on that, the lights after dark when the cars in the parking structure have their lights on, will that be screened from residents to the south?
Yes, because there's a what we call a stem wall that will be
How
up.
High is that?
I think it's 4 feet?
4 feet.
We can check, but it's designed to basically be over the headlights.
And the vines that you're proposing to put up, is that just on the south-facing side?
Yes, because there's buildings on either side, and then we have the front side that we're addressing through these other.
The front side is the side that's adjacent to the station?
The front side is adjacent to the station. That's, well, it's across the street.
That's what I meant, but it's it's the side that faces the station. Has there been any consideration given to putting vines on that side as well? Or is there no...
I don't believe so. I think the issue was from an urban, from the Urban Design Committee, was to do these other features by putting these fins in. It pretty much hides that front portion of it.
Okay.
Just to clarify, we did look at landscaping on the north side, but it faces the shade, so we had to have the landscapers take a look at it, and it wasn't really conducive for putting vines. They felt that they wouldn't grow adequately. We do have some landscaping because we have some catch basins there and some drainage, so we are doing some landscaping at a lower level, but in terms of having vines grow up the side, it was determined they would not succeed on the north side.
Yeah. Paul, any other questions at this point?
No.
All right, so that's, we need an action on this?
Yes.
6A, so moved.
Second.
Moved by Mihal, seconded by Paul, without objection. B.
Item 6B, Phase 2 work authorization for Southern California Edison.
Yes, this is a revised agenda item. We, at the previous board meeting, the board authorized us to get started with the underground conduit work, which we are getting quotes from the contractor from. We're also going to need various work orders for Southern Cal Edison, Southern Cal Gas, as well as DWP. This is for the first one that is ready to go. It happens to be the underground work by Southern Cal Edison on Colorado Boulevard between 14th and 17th Street, and they have provided a cost of $1.716 million to do that work. It actually will be on a incurred cost basis, so at the end of the job, once the work is done, we'll reconcile the actual costs, but usually they're very conservative, and we wind up getting some money back at the end, but it will be on what their actual cost is. But this is our estimate. They won't proceed with the work until we actually cut them a check. So this is our request for approval to issue them a work order for that work.
Any discussion? Mihal.
Just out of curiosity, I'm a little confused by the comment that the forecast for utility relocations is trending higher. Utility relocations, wasn't that put into the bid? Wasn't that what, didn't everyone know this is not a moving target, this is something that was understood by both parties? Shouldn't that be the responsibility of the bidder?
No, actually it wasn't known, and you don't know what the requirements are until you actually get the design completed to the 85% stage. So in the what we did is we estimated the cost at the conclusion of the environmental documents. Then once we get the final design, it depends on whether we make assumptions as to whether we can raise the lines or whether they have to be underground, and you don't know until the design is complete how much underground or overhead has to be done. So we traditionally, because it's an unknown at the time, a contractor doesn't have the ability to fix a price because the work is unknown at the time. So what we do is estimate the best we can based on what we have at that time and incorporate that into our budget. And so things like we were originally going to go across Sepulveda at grade, which would not have required any utility relocation. And now, because we're overhead, we now have to relocate.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. motion to approve item 6B? Moved by O'Connor, seconded by O'Leary without objection. Yeah, let's vote. Let's start.
Seven A, Phase 1 and Phase 2 project status update.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be filling in for our chief project officer today on this item, just to go over what the progress that we have made. Pretty rusty at giving presentations here. We'll start with Expo Phase 1. Where we stand is obviously in the closeout stages. We have been in Revenue Service now for a couple months. There are issues that we continue to work on. We'll talk about one of those, which is the junction, as well as some train control things as well. We continue to work on those. Other things that need to take place, we think will in the next 60 days, is one requirement for us to grant substantial completion after the contractor completes certain elements of the work. There are three remaining items that they need to do. One is delivery of spare parts. The other one is as-built plans. And then we are still missing the actual paperwork on a couple of test results. So once those are all in, we will grant substantial completion to the contractor. And then we still have the closeout items, which are punch list items, warranty issues, and other items, that including closing out change orders prior to giving final acceptance to the contractor. And right now we expect that to occur sometime in early 2013. We do still have a lot of change orders that we are evaluating and working on right now. And we will also, before we give final acceptance, have to have all claims resolved. So it may take some time before we actually get to final acceptance. And then the final thing that's not on here is a turnback process, where we then work with Metro to make sure that everything is operating correctly, warranty items have been taken care of, and we turn the whole system back over to Metro at that time. Next item is the project budget. As we have run out of contingency at this point, and as we resolve change orders, there are two types of change orders: those that were in our forecast, and then those that were unknown or unforeseen. As we evaluate those change orders, some of them may not have been in our forecast, our shortfall increases. Right now we are at $5.7 million in shortfall on the overall project, but there's still other change orders that we need to evaluate. There are additional third-party costs and professional services as we continue to close out the project and other items. There are also cost containment efforts underway. Those are looking at third parties for reimbursement of certain elements of work that we have done in advance of getting reimbursement. We estimate that about $2.8 million. So this is gives you a little summary, and as you can see, as we close out some change orders, that delta continues to grow right now at about $5.7 million. Moving on to Expo Phase 2, a lot of work is now starting to take place.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
On Phase 1.
Yes, sir.
Questions appropriate now on Phase 1.
Yes.
Should we
yes.
look at the closeout running over in early 2013, correct?
Yes.
The significant discussions that have taken place regarding safety issues, Mr. Thorpe, they have not been factored into major issues, as is indicated on page, I guess it is, 3 of the PowerPoint. Those things that are unresolved, particularly as they pertain to costs that are yet to be prepared, costs that are yet to be resolved, and by whom they would appropriately be incurred. The back and forth between Expo Metro and the CPUC, it would seem to me that the report might have been more thorough for the purposes of board clarification and public consumption as to what outstanding issues there might be and if they have fiscal impacts. As to whether or not you are prepared to answer those things now, I don't know, but I'm satisfied to raise them in this context and expect a more thorough presentation of those issues so at least they are definitively spoken to and I think is appropriate in the context of a report like this on phase one.
We'll be happy to do that. We can start next month by expanding that list. The junction issue we put in as a separate agenda item to speak in more detail about that particular issue. But there are other issues that we are working on the train control and the status with that. We'll take a harder look and incorporate that next month in the issues area, if that's acceptable.
It is, particularly with an eye to the fiscal impact issues that may attach to them. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Go ahead on phase two.
Okay. Phase two, the construction, heavy construction is now starting to get underway. As you can see, this is the Motor Avenue bridge demolition. If you go out to Motor Avenue, that bridge structure is now gone. It went very well. Contractor got in, did it in a very timely manner, and was out according to plan as far as schedule-wise. This happens to be the Centinella Avenue. This is in preparations for the bridge abutment work and what we call a CIHD pile. So it's basically the foundation that's going to support the overhead bridge, and that work is getting underway pretty much as we speak. One of the things we needed to do before we could start a lot of the work along Colorado Boulevard was to replace parking along Colorado Boulevard. We have now replaced the park. Contractor has now replaced the parking. This one shows the parking replacement at 7th Street, and there are three other locations that they have done. So we're now ready to actually start utility relocation work on Colorado Boulevard. Where we stand with design, it's progressing very well. We pretty much have 85% plans on everything. Contractors moving to 100% design. We should have all design completed by the end of the year. One of the things that design build does to move a project along is, as I indicated, the Centinella bridge foundation is going in. So even though we don't have 100% design on the bridge, the contractor has advanced, and we call it partial design packages, advanced the bridge foundation work so that work can get underway while the 100% design is completed. We have finalized the National Palms work area and are in the process of working with the city of LA to figure out a cost split for those intersection improvements, and we're optimistic that we'll reach some sort of agreement with them, and when we do, then we'll bring it back for final action here by the board. Then a lot of the work, as I mentioned, we've got sewer and water relocation work going. We're about to start some of the DWP and Southern Cal Edison work relocations. We are in the rough grading stages for the alignment in some areas on phase two. We're removing a hazardous soil on site in preparation for finishing the grading efforts for the guideway. Talked about the removal of the Motor Avenue Bridge and the replacement parking along Colorado Avenue. Major issues continue to be the LADWP and SCE delays and overcoming those delays, what we call recovering schedule. We're working at the executive management level. I'm meeting monthly with Southern Cal Edison on trying to resolve some of the delays that we've incurred. We're working with the contractor on what we call workarounds, the ability to get the work going without the lines being down. We've come up with some real good ideas. Yesterday we had a partnering session with Southern Cal Edison and got some good commitments out of them to, again, help mitigate those delays. So we're doing everything we can right now. And then later on, we will be looking at the possibility of accelerating the contractor's work once the utilities are relocated in order to recover schedule as well. Maintenance facility design is moving towards the 100% level, and by the end of the year, it too will be completely designed and ready to advertise for a contract. Venice Boulevard aerial structure, sewer relocation is the first work that needs to be done. While we're doing that work, we're finalizing the 100% design for the bridge, and we've completed that and are incorporating Caltrans comments on that design. And then from the bikeway standpoint, we have received the preliminary engineering drawings from the contractor. Contractor's producing a price for that work so we can compare what the price is versus what we have available from a budget standpoint. And then as directed, we'll meet with the Bicycle Advisory Committee to go over that, and we'll report back next month. And then from just finally from a community outreach standpoint, we held two meetings on phase two. We had a very, very good turnout, over 250 people over those two meetings, where we went over what the plans were from a construction standpoint and what the community might expect. And then we held other meetings as necessary with stakeholders. From a local hourly job standpoint, contractors making good progress right now. Based on work, they're at 38.9% local hire hours as compared to their goal of 30%. So they're making a very good progress from that standpoint. From the SBE goal standpoint, the local SBE right now is 5.6 compared to the goal of 7%. SBE is 7.5% compared to 20. And as we do more and more work, as we ramp up, those numbers will continue to grow. And that concludes my report.
Director O'Leary.
Yes, since you commented on the bikeway contract, the written word in the report is completed the review of preliminary engineering drawing. Could you just change that to include that it's not quite complete without the input of the VA?
Well, it's probably, and that's why I changed it a little bit, because we have completed our review to see if it was consistent with the environmental documents, not that it was ready to move on to the next stage.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, colleagues, I want to acknowledge the work that is being done on local hire and the extent to which the objective is being met. I think that's not a small thing, particularly compared to where phase one was at this point in its development. So I think it's noteworthy that the policies that the board promulgated are sticking. This was not simply about local hire. It was not simply about a PLA, but in fact about SBE. We look at SBE, I think we are faced with a challenge in terms of the work yet to be done to reach the projected goals. I would like to say to staff that efforts need to be redoubled to accomplish that. And while I offer that point of view, I want to make note of the fact for the decision makers here and the policy makers here, as I look at projects across the board, this is the area in which there is a significant amount of challenge, such as the case with the projects that are under construction. County, the SBE piece is falling significantly behind its goals as compared to the targeted hire or the local hire. So it probably means we need to go back and think about how we gain more success. So this is not necessarily a problem that's unique to Expo Authority at this point in time, but a collective conversation among project managers, CEOs of the respective projects might be useful, because I know, Rick, in the case of Expo Authority, that you worked very hard to make sure that this piece was a part of the essentially tripartite discussion about career constructions, namely the PLA and local hire, but the SBE component was not an afterthought. In fact, it was the integral. So we probably really need to figure out how we can achieve more success. But I say that with an eye toward it being a challenge, apparently, that is being more broadly experienced. So let's have a conversation about that.
Rick, did you want to go through some of the other items?
Pardon?
Where did we leave off? Items 7.
Yes, we're on to 7B. Item 7B is again to bring you up to speed on where we are with the noise and vibration work. We have Hugh Sauerman, who is with ATS Consulting, has provided us with, has been our consultant on noise, an expert in the field, especially as it relates to light rail. He was with us in Pasadena. He was with us on East Side. He's with us now on Expo Phase 1. I'll just generally tell you kind of where we are, and if there's any specific items, we can ask Hugh, especially in light of this what his opinion might be on the landscaping on the parking structure. But generally in phase one, from a noise standpoint, at least the initial test results are falling in line with what was assumed in the environmental documents, both from a noise standpoint and a vibration standpoint. Let me take just a second, and Hugh can probably explain it better than I can, but what happens in the environmental, we mitigated to what they call Federal Transit Administration, FTA, guidelines. And those guidelines set three different levels of noise. One is a level of noise where there's no impact. And it doesn't mean that there isn't going to be noise. What they wind up doing is the FTA guidelines make certain assumptions. And, for example, when a train goes by and the gates go down, that's a very high noise, but it's only over a very short period of time. And then at night, when the ambient noise goes down, there's a penalty that FTA assigns of 10 decibels that takes into account that nighttime noise is less tolerable to a community than daytime noise. And so what happens is all of these noise measurements over a 24-hour period get converted into entered into a formula and then compared to the FTA guidelines of no impact, moderate impact, and severe impact. And what we found so far is there, and let me explain, no impact means there's no further mitigation that's necessary. Moderate impact means that you need to take a look and see if there are other things that you can do or whether you, whether from a policy perspective, you need to do anything. And it's a broad spectrum. At the bottom, you go from no impact to moderate. So if you're right in that area, then you have to take a look and see if there's anything specific that you can do. If you're at the other area between severe and moderate, then you really need to focus on mitigation areas. So what we found so far is there are no impacts from a vibration standpoint that we've been able to determine. From a noise perspective, pretty much everything is falling in line with what our assessments were going to be as a result of incorporating mitigating measures such as the sound walls. There are a couple of areas that just go one decibel into the moderate area. We think there might be some things that we can do as far as rail grinding, polishing the rail to make it smoother, that could mitigate that as well. So those are things that we will be looking into. Additionally, we only took 9 spots. We took 3 in Culver City. We've been in discussions with Metro, who had also done some noise studies. We'll be working closely with them to do more studies to expand the area that we have done before we finalize the report and bring it back to you. We also will be working with Culver City. I understand they have a noise consultant that they've hired to take a look at the noise and our report as well. So we'll all be working together, and we'll bring, you know, once we finalize it, we'll bring it back to the board as a final report. So with that, I don't know if you'd like to, if there's any questions of Hugh right now. Hugh, is there anything that you'd like to add that maybe I missed?
Yeah, I guess the one thing I'd like to clarify is that these decibel readings are averages. Is it a point in time, is it 4:01 p.m., or is it the average decibel on August 2nd?
I'll have few answer that, but it's an average because, you know, at a gate crossing you might get 80 decibels, you know, momentarily, but it's over a 24-hour
period. Why don't you explain that? And when you have a decibel reading of 60, as shown on this chart, is that an average over a period of time?
Yes, typically it's an average. If you hold the sound level meter up, you'll see the meter going up and down.
Right, so it's an average over what period of time?
We're doing average over a 24-hour period.
Okay.
So full day of it.
So the average may be 59 decibels, but when the train comes by and it rings its bell, the average person like Mr. Simmons or any of the rest of us would have a hard time. I mean, the incredulity that people have when they say, well, you're within 60, whatever the number is, 60, 59 decibels, that the noise that people hear, the Caltrain, in Northern California, where my daughter lives, you hear the horn of the train coming by every several minutes. It's not disruptive, but you hear it. You look closer to the train and you hear the ding, ding, ding of the bell, then you might think that's disruptive if you're trying to watch a...
I hesitate to answer that with a long answer, but basically the research and how humans respond to noise, first of all, every human's different, so there's a wide variation, but the approach we use is the average over the 24-hour is the best way available of comparing different types of noise.
I understand that, but I think it's important for all of us to understand, because it occurred to me that this was an average, and that the folks who are complaining about this need to understand that they're not nuts when they're saying this noise is, and everybody is different, but somebody may think that a ding-ding coming by their house at 10 o'clock at night is too noisy. But on the average, you're within the guidelines. All we're required to do is be within the guidelines. But as the old statistical axiom goes, if you have 1 foot in the freezer and 1 foot in the oven, on the average, you're comfortable. And so it's not the 23 and a half hours where nothing is happening that's concerning them and that we hear about. It's the half an hour cumulatively over a 24-hour period where the train goes by, rings its bell, blows its horn, does all that stuff. So when you say we're in compliance, we're talking past some of the folks who are concerned about this because they're not interested in the average. They're interested in the 10 times a day that this thing drives them nuts. And is that a fair layman's way of describing this? Have you ever heard that axiom about averages?
It's a long statement, but the answer is basically yes. It is. It is an average. You will hear the trains going by. They are louder than the background noise, so you certainly notice the trains going by.
Yeah.
So let me maybe just try, and you're exactly right. What we're doing right now is determining whether our project as built conforms with the environmental documents. Doesn't mean that you're right that somebody isn't hearing that train.
What I'm saying, let me cut it short. What I'm saying is you're right and Clint Simmons is right.
When Clint stands out right at a grade crossing, he's going to see something a lot higher than what's on this.
Right.
The average. No question about it.
Okay. I just wanted to get that out there because I think that's something that definitions of what you measure as average or at a point in time makes a big difference in how this is perceived. Okay. Go ahead to the next item.
Okay.
Miha has a question.
Just some comments. I'm glad to hear that it's being categorized as an interim report, as we discussed earlier. I completely understand the FTA guidelines from a reasonable or tolerable perspective from the public's viewpoint, and we are going to be doing our own study. And all I wanted to make sure, or we wanted to make sure, was that the consultants for Expo, Metro, and Culver City coordinate the methodologies and locations of the noise and vibrations measurements. We because we obviously, as the representatives for Culver City, need our due diligence and to be able to respond to concerns by the residents. Secondly, Metro should implement standard operating procedures as soon as possible for the train operators in order to try and introduce consistency in train operation prior to the noise and vibrations measurements being taken. And then lastly, the noise analysis should take into account how the line is going to be operated in phase two when the line extends to Santa Monica, as well as in the phase one period when Culver City is the terminal station. Any potential mitigation, if necessary, should be designed and implemented to address the final phase two operational characteristics.
Okay. 7C.
7C, phase one, C.
This item is in response to questions and about the junction and a directive letter that we received by the California Public Utilities Commission. The California Public Utilities Commission, as you're aware, regulates rail safety in the state of California. They have been concerned over modifications that we made to a piece of equipment called the Diamond at the junction, or excuse me, they call it the Frog at the junction. In order to eliminate some excessive wear that we noticed after we first placed the Frog into service, our designer came up with a solution to eliminate that excessive wear by welding, putting a weld on this Frog, which essentially moved the wheels over so they didn't rub against the adjacent piece of track work. The Public Utilities Commission has been concerned about that weld. There have been a couple of times where we've had little chips come out of it and we've had to go back and re-weld it. As a result of the second time that we had to re-weld it, they issued us a directive letter to replace it. Once we received, and it was addressed to Mr. Leahy and myself, once we received that letter, we immediately convened a meeting with the Public Utilities Commission up in San Francisco at their headquarters office to pretty much reach an agreement on a path forward, and I think we did reach that agreement. One of them was, my concern was, if we replace that Frog, which we could do, Metro has one, a spare in their yard, we could replace it. My concern was we would fulfill the PUC's dictate, but we might wind up with a worse situation than we have right now. So we mutually agreed, Metro, ourselves, and the PUC, that we would identify nationally renowned track work experts in the field, and we would jointly or mutually select one of those to come in and evaluate the Diamond and to make recommendations on what should be done, because our goal is if we're going to do something at that Diamond, we want to make sure that this is the last time, because in order for us to replace that Frog, excuse me, I've mixed Diamond and Frog together, but depends on who you speak to. But if we're going to modify that junction in any way, we're going to have to close down the Expo line, and we're now going to have to close down the Blue line and run bus bridges around it while we do the work. And so I think it's really important that we make sure whatever we do and we impact our Metro's ridership, that it solves the problem so that we don't have continuing debate on what the solution is. So that's where we are. On August 9th, we meet with the PUC. We've developed a list of track work experts, and we have their resumes. meet with the PUC on August 9th. Hopefully we can start a process in selecting one of those consultants to get out here. I've also am working with Metro on addressing other issues in their letter, including train control. And they've asked for a plan and a schedule. We'll have a draft of that available on August 9th to go over with them.
And in the meantime, what are the steps you're taking to ensure that safety is not compromised?
In the meantime, Metro is monitoring that junction on a daily basis. We are on a monthly basis ultrasonically testing that frog to make sure there's no defects in it. As an additional measure, Metro has slowed the trains from 10 miles an hour down to 5 miles an hour through that junction. So we will continue to do that until a solution is developed and implemented.
And when you're doing the ultrasonic testing, what are you looking for, cracks?
Any kind of, abnormalities, cracks in the weld, cracks in the cast portion of the manganese area. So any kind of defect that we might find. And then we have agreed that if we find anything whatsoever, we will immediately contact the PUC and get them involved.
And fix what, if there is a crack,
right,
or a defect in the weld, you would re-weld it, I assume.
Yes, and we have, when we found that second chip back in June, that has been re-welded. And we're monitoring it on a daily basis, and as far as I know, there have been no issues since we made that re-weld.
So, and from a standpoint of safety, the safety of the train operations at this point?
Yeah, we don't believe there was ever an issue of safety. I don't, you know, the PUC would not have let us go into revenue service. Mr. Leahy would not have recommended Metro start revenue service, and I certainly wouldn't have ever recommended that we started revenue service if there was an issue of safety. We've been operating over that diamond for over 2 years. Probably close to 200,000 trains have gone through that diamond or frog that junction without incident. And, again, we believe with the precautions we've taken, the added precautions of monitoring this almost on a daily basis and reducing the speed, we're all satisfied that this is not a safety issue.
How many times has the weld failed?
The weld has never failed. Twice there was a chip the size of a penny that came off of the weld, and we suspect the first time it was an impurity in the weld. The second time when they re-welded it, we believe it got too hot and didn't what we call take to the previous weld. Since that time, the last time we did it, it took a very long time to make sure that we did not exceed the 900 degrees that manganese can take on a weld, and we think that we shouldn't be getting any more defects. Just a reminder that the first weld went almost a year and a half before we even got this chip without any problems whatsoever.
Was the chip a problem, or did you fix it out of an abundance of caution? I mean, did the chip itself indicate any?
No, the chip was not a problem because we ultrasonically tested the entire frog, and there were no defects in any other place except this chip, and the chip didn't affect the operations at all.
Okay. Billy Thomas, Mr. O'Leary.
Chairman, I'm concerned that we do pin down the issue of safety, that we have accurate representations of whether or not Expo Authority staff and or Metro staff are concerned about fact, the CPUC is concerned about safety, or ever has been, pursuant to the line being in operation. In the letter to Mr. Leahy and Mr. Thorpe, dated July 13, I think it is clear that the CPUC has been concerned about safety. As they explicitly mentioned, references to the frog, essentially saying, and I quote, that the current frog is unacceptable. It is a non-standard frog, a non-standard fix, and separately and repeatedly failing weld. You know which letter I'm referring to?
Yes, sir.
Then it goes further to say our concern is with safety, is with the safety of your light rail vehicles, which in the diverging direction must travel through the non-standard and vulnerable part of the frog. If you wish, instead of expediting the frog replacement, you may cease operation through the diverging route at the frog. Now, perhaps it's useful, Mr. Thorpe, to provide clarification for the board, because I thought a moment ago I heard you say that I'm prepared to be corrected if I misunderstood you, but there hasn't been a concern about safety on the part of what entities, the MTA and or Expo?
Yes.
Or did you suggest that that was not the case with the CPUC as well?
The CPUC has been concerned about the diamond. I think what they're referring to is long-term safety. What happens with that weld is the wheel hits that weld, and what they, I think, were referring to is the long-term impacts that it may have on the wheels of the light rail vehicles.
That's not, I defer to your technical expertise and competence, Mr. Thorpe, but that's not the way I necessarily read this. And I don't know that I want to reduce safety issues to technical considerations alone. And obviously, the business of engineering and design is, in fact, technical. There ought to be a way in which we can be declarative with respect to safety issues and not parse that in terms of immediate and or long term, because from a ridership perspective, and I dare say from the perspective of a board member, safety essentially means safety. And absent that, it begins to be more nebulous, I think, is tenable. And so I think the board is due a careful response to the issues raised here so that no one is under any misimpression, you might say, or if, in fact, the CPUC is prepared to retract or correct or update what it has said, that would be useful as well. To date, I don't know that such has been the case, but this concerns me, and I would think that such would be the case for other board members as well, should they be in receipt of the letter.
Well, maybe I could respond.
It came from your office, and I don't know that it would have come to any single board member, so I'm assuming everyone has gotten it.
I think everybody got it. I think the newspaper published it. Excerpts of it.
Well, I sent an email to everybody with it.
That's what I just said.
Let me maybe try to respond. Our track work experts believe it is not a safety issue. Now, maybe the CPUC believes that the case, so maybe one suggestion is the track work, this national track work expert that we bring on board, maybe we assign him the first job is to evaluate and determine if there is a safety issue associated with the junction.
Or the CPUC has to cause the board to appreciate that the matter is being satisfactorily addressed, and the concerns they seem to be definitively raising are not being left unattended. To the extent that they function in a regulatory capacity, I think we have an obligation to be in compliance there. And whether the authority or the MTA, that is the Expo Authority or MTA, differs with them.
Well, again, maybe, we will be meeting with them on August 9th. And what I would suggest is they have agreed to a mutually select a track work expert. So I would hope, and I will ask, that the track work expert that we hire, if he comes in and says this is not a safety issue, would they then agree with that because he is the expert? Obviously, they disagree with us. Maybe that's a way to resolve that concern if they then are part of the selection of this track work expert, and the track work expert then concludes that it's safe, but we should modify it this way. If they buy into that, then I would think.
Right. But the CPUC has the authority to stop the operation of this train.
That's
they think
correct.
It's unsafe. They haven't done so.
That's correct.
They have said that as long as you do certain things, which you're in constant touch with them on this, I assume Metro is as well, if you take the steps that you are taking, that they are sufficiently satisfied that the trains can continue to operate.
Yes,
that's the issue. The long-term issue, the long-term fix, nobody disputes. You're going to make a long-term fix. The question is, what is that fix? You want to do it right second time, since we didn't do it right the first time. Do it right the next time so we don't have to do it ever again. That's the objective. But I think it's kind of ironic. Ridership, while all of this has been stirring in the public, stoked by various well-meaning people, ridership has gone from 11,000 to 16,000 in 1 month. So I think that all of this needs to be, while we've had 8 fatalities on the Blue Line in the first 6 months of this year, I don't even know how many accidents we've had on the Expo line, but it's a scintilla of a fraction of what we had on the Orange line when we opened it up in the first couple of months, first month. And we had very few accidents and clearly no fatalities, and I don't think we've had any serious injuries that I'm aware of. Am I correct on that? So from an overall operational standpoint, this is actually is better than the Orange line, it's better than the Eastside Gold line, it's better than the Pasadena Gold line when it first opened. Somehow the people who live and drive through this corridor have figured out there's a train coming by, and they know. And we've learned from the mistakes or the, that were made in Pasadena, the San Fernando Valley, and elsewhere, and with signage and signalization and that sort of thing. So I mean to raise issues of exigent safety problems. As opposed to the long-term fix that we need is not accurately reflecting the facts on the ground, because the facts on the ground are you signed off on it, Leahy signed off on it, and he accepted the train for the route for a revenue operation, and the CPUC, while not responsible for signing off on it, has not pulled the plug on it, as long as we do what we need to be doing. We need to do what we need to be doing. We need to figure out what the permanent fix is, because obviously it's in our best interest both in terms of long-term safety, and it's also in the best interest of better managing our resources. They have a guy going out there every day checking the weld. It's not something we do on any other train, to my knowledge, and it costs money. Hopefully we're hiring that person locally. So make it more convenient. Director O'Leary.
Yes, I would like to break it down to layman's terms. You've used the term that there hasn't been a failure at this junction, this frog. I would like to know, when the experts convene, that what would a failure mean? If there's a crack in a bridge, we all know that a catastrophic failure could result. This piece, this frog, I can't imagine this, even if it's a non-standard design, is the first of its kind ever to be used. There must be other examples. There must be a maintenance schedule that, yes, these types of frogs, they require maintenance on a bi-yearly basis or whatever the schedule is, and that's what we need to know. We need to know, if it was to fail, does that mean that the train just stops? Well, that to me is not a safety issue. That's just an inconvenience. So I'd like to know, should it fail, what would failure mean? How would that impact or the safety features? And so that would be something that I would like to know.
Okay, you keep us posted, and I would ask that you keep us posted, even in the intervening days between meetings, so on a real-time basis. So if there's any development, one way or the other, positive or negative, that you keep the board, obviously Metro. This goes for Metro, too.
Absolutely.
Keep us posted on their end. See everybody working together to get this done.
Mr. Chair, it would seem to me that this board is due, as you already asked, feedback from the CEO. Similarly, the Metro board probably should be apprised of the specifics in terms of the evolution of the discussions there, so that everybody is made aware in real time. I just think the specter of a discussion of this sort at that level, where the issue is being raised and you have documents to which reference can be made concerning safety, needs to be put to rest one way or another. It just has to be, and if the PUC is raising those issues, they need to own up and declare themselves in a definitive way, or do otherwise. These are documents that are officially sent forth to all of us that are in our packets. And they don't seem to me to be particularly ambiguous. And to the extent that Metro or Expo differs, I don't know what significant difference that makes if they keep making these claims. And I suspect if they had retracted it in any way or modified it in any way, that would be in our documents. It is not. And I don't know how any board member can choose to ignore this in order to rationalize it in any way by virtue of a count in terms of the increase in ridership. A lot of people on the Titanic.
Well, thank you for that. The letter is very clear.
Yeah.
The letter says fix it.
Right.
Don't stop operating it. Fix it. That's what we're doing. And one way we can end this discussion once and for all is to fix it.
As long as it costs.
All right.
Saying it's not an overnight fix. I mean,
this could take months. Right. Could take longer than months.
So we need to be on
depending
top
what
of
the
this
fix
and,
is.
And get regular updates.
But in the meantime, it is safe to operate. it is safe to operate.
That's
and any board member who wants to stoke the fears or the sensationalism of trying to suggest otherwise is also disingenuous, because it is, there isn't a member of this board, there isn't a CEO of either Metro or Expo, or at the California Public Utilities Commission that would operate this thing, this line, if it thought for a moment that it was unsafe.
Well, they should say that. Point blank. And Mr. Thorpe, I would...
They say it by
action. No, not
their
by
action.
Not by... No, you can infer that.
Oh,
they should say, look, you read one way, I read another
that's
way.
That's right.
All right? And the point is, the specter of it is what it is.
The specter of it is what we all keep saying it is.
No, I don't know that the world is ordered according to the view articulated by Yaroslavsky. I'm essentially suggesting the following. At minimum, they ought to be able to assert that it is safe to operate. They owe us that, if in fact they believe that. And I don't think we should, in any way, seek to rationalize or downplay whatever it is they are saying in these documents. And certainly, you don't have to be a purveyor of gloom and doom to read the term safety and hope that you can get a higher level of confidence as to what the regulatory agency is or is not saying.
Okay.
So, Mr. Thorpe, Mr. Leahy, get them to be more definitive as to what at least some board members are concerned about.
Are you suggesting that if they don't make such a statement, we should stop operation, Mr. Ridley-Thomas?
No, what I am saying, Mr. Yaroslavsky, that since ultimately you don't make the determination as to what is safe or is not, I'd like for those who are responsible for doing so to assert that definitively.
Okay, my
and
question.
I do not feel for one moment that the staff ought to be in the position of having to defend themselves against what may be construed as a statement that is less than definitive.
Okay, I'm just reading from the letter of the CPUC.
Right.
I
mean, read the whole thing, and the tone of it is not particularly encouraging.
Our staff will be reviewing these new instructions as written and as practiced. You should ensure that these instructions are continuously followed. You should continuously monitor and evaluate these operations, including feedback from LRV operators, to see if any changes might be needed to ensure safety. If any such changes are needed, immediately send copies to whoever at the CPUC. So, anyway.
All right. Let's keep going through it selectively.
Mr. Leahy has asked to be heard. Mark,
well,
may I
go finish my, you know.
I'll come back to you.
No, let me just kind of finish with your permission, Mr. Chair. You read a particular portion. I read a portion. If you wish, instead of expediting a frog replacement, you may cease operation through.
That's right.
You know me.
And what did we decide to do? Expedite frog replacement. I think it's very clear. Mr. Leahy?
Well, we went back to the PUC. We had folks from MTA and Rick met with the PUC in San Francisco a few days after the letter was received, and we agreed to a plan. The plan has to do with bringing in an independent outside expert.
Right.
Now, from that will emerge some kind of a response to the larger complaint from us, and the PUC will either accept or not accept that at that time. If they believe that the plan results in an unsafe action, they're compelled to tell us that.
Right.
So I think as we go through the material that we develop along with the outside independent expert in partnership with the PUC, we will either achieve agreement or we won't, but whatever, there'll be a plan that the PUC will ultimately require us to follow. Absolutely require us to follow it. Otherwise, they have the right to stop operations.
So let me ask you a question, Mr. Leahy. Do you think the concerns being raised are overstated or exaggerated, or would you wish for a more definitive statement on the part of the PUC so that the cloud is removed?
I don't know if, you know, regulatory agencies, federal agencies and state typically tell you when they're unhappy with you rather than when they're happy with you. In the absence of an expression of unhappiness, you would proceed. So in this case, you know, we're going to work with them on it and develop a response to the problem.
So this is typical regulatory bureaucratic scare tactics.
I don't know if I'd call it a scare tactic because...
Well, it is typical bureaucratic and regulatory.
Yeah, right.
You know, to get a letter from the PUC like this is a very important event that we must take very seriously. So I'm not minimizing the fact that they raised the issue. I think what is of note is that they've agreed to do the additional work precedent to developing whatever the ultimate plan will be.
Given your experience and your experience, Mr. Thorpe, over building projects, monitoring projects, implementing projects, how many times have you ever received a letter of this sort? I mean, is it usual, unusual? I mean, you kind of made the impression when the feds speak, they speak in a particular way. But, I mean, is this unusual or not?
It's certainly not common. I don't know if it's ever happened before, but to be directed to replace the frog is a significant event.
I mean, I'm really seeking to put it in proper context.
I guess there's no question, and I agree with Mr. Leahy, that this was a very clear letter that they want to see this frog replaced. And we've
but common or uncommon is the question I've asked, Mr. Thorpe.
But...
My experience
was we had similar issues with the PUC on the Pasadena line. Not track work related, but grade crossing related, that, you know, they wanted certain grade crossings closed, modified, Marmion Way. We had on the Expo Phase 1, you know, the last board meeting, I came in with a change order on the requirements where they would not allow us to have 8 left-hand turns into LA Trade Tech. They dictated that they would not approve those. And so may not be related to track work, but we have received letters and direction from them.
So it's not uncommon.
No, because they're the right.
So Leahy says it's a bit uncommon.
Well,
you say it is.
For them to
come
in and dictate.
I said the letter that has been received, Mr. Thorpe.
I've never received one that dictated that I replace a piece of track.
But you've received other letters.
But I've received a lot of regulatory letters directing me to do other things.
Most
of
them
close a grade crossing. You can't have 8 lanes of traffic going at a trade tech, and any number of other things. It's not frequent. Obviously, it's not frequent.
No.
But a lot of the issues that we had on this line and on previous lines were resolved in the earlier stages before the thing is operating. This is a work that goes on with the PUC almost from the conception of the line. As we are working with them now on issues dealing with Phase 2. So the fact that it's an unusual letter is not noteworthy. The question is what the letter says. And the letter clearly says, fix it. Fix it. And that is our responsibility, is to fix it. And we'll work together to fix it. Expo, Metro, and the PUC. And we do it right the first time, or this time, so there won't be a next time. Just comment that we've been talking about this any size chip in the well for over an hour now. That's more time than we have spent at the Metro in all of the years that I've said on Metro talking about safety on the Blue Line, where we've lost dozens of people, probably over 100 by now. That's what kind of fries me. But all right, we'll have that opportunity on Monday.
But they're not unrelated.
No.
We don't want the repeat of the Blue Line on the Expo Line.
We don't want a repeat, but we've got the peat.
No.
You've got to do the peat.
Wait a minute now. peat.
Something about sausage?
No.
All right.
I think we should move the agenda now.
Yeah, thank you. I think we finally see eye to eye.
back, receive and file on the Sepulveda grade separation. There were some questions. We did not include the cost for the undergrounding when we went to grade separation. We did not include those costs as part of the betterments. We had missed that. We've now gone back and done some calculations of the cost of if it was at grade versus the cost, the full cost, including the lowering of the utilities as well as some other costs, the emergency exits that have been required subsequent to the initial environmental impact. The bottom line is that the costs are basically a wash because there were almost $6 million in savings by not constructing at grade, and the cost of lowering utilities and the other costs are about $6 million as well. So, you know, I would recommend that we transfer the money that we had set aside in the right-of-way for the right-of-way that we no longer have to acquire, move that over to the utility relocation line item, and we would, with the board's concurrence, do that at our next budget revision.
All right. So, do you need an action today, or is
no.
this is just information?
It's just
okay.
information.
Any discussion?
Not.
We'll go file that. What else do we have?
Item 8, CEO comments.
No further comments.
Okay. Any board comments?
Yes.
Director O'Connor.
Oh, I was just going to say I've taken Expo twice, including this weekend, to go downtown to visit Grand Park. So, and had good rides on Expo. So that's my report.
My wife and I came up a few Saturdays ago, took the train to Exposition Park. My compliments to the county, the museums, and the Rose Garden are beautiful. And we did contribute to the county by paying to see Cleopatra and the movie on Egypt, and they were quite good.
I'm so relieved that you kept the SC reference out of that.
Wait till the
term.
He's learned his lesson.
Can't wait. Director O'Leary.
And I just wanted to state that I also took the Expo and went all the way to, I took two other lines, all the way to Chatsworth. And I tell you, I will never do that again.
Oh, I did that a few weeks ago.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
You prompt me. I really should report on the discussions we're having with USC on the football games.
Yeah.
This is really a big development. USC is going to mail out Metro park and ride location rail schedules to all of their season ticket holders and others who buy tickets via email. They're going to co-promote the games with MTA. We're going to run 6-minute frequencies on all of our lines during, before, and after games. I will say to you, the crisis in the game would be the away movement. If the game is tight and no one leaves early, there's going to be quite a crowd out there. But we think we have a great opportunity here to educate novice riders into riding the system all the time.
Okay. Thank you, Art, for that update. And, Art, since you're here, before you arrived, we wanted to ask if Metro, since Metro has asked us to build a transparent elevator at the Westwood Station of Expo, whether you would also take a look at all existing elevators in the rest of our system and from Metro's point of view and see what it would take to retrofit those for the same security purposes.
Will do.
All right. We have a closed session.
Mr. Chairman, at the board, if the board so desires, we can put the closed session off till next month.
That's fine. Nothing or nothing. Time
There's nothing. There. No, nothing real urgent.
Okay, great. Thank you. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Objection.